is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I just have seen a lot of drills that aren't necessarily great for development or not showing and teaching. Here's why you would do this. Here's where this drill fits into your workout. And with game shots, I want it to be where you can go get high quality player development and high quality team development.
Joel Lincoln, also known as the Basketball Barista, is the founder of Game Shots Basketball and co-host of the Summer Grind YouTube podcast. Joel played his high school basketball at Durant High School in Iowa. Following his graduation, he began his coaching career as a student assistant at Northwest Missouri State, including a 2012 NCAA tournament appearance. After earning his degree in K-12 physical education, he became a graduate assistant coach at East Central University in Oklahoma. After earning his master's degree, he moved to Oregon. He began coaching and leading youth clinics for Lake Oswego High School before becoming a varsity assistant and player development coach at LaSalle Prep. Joel also served as the head coach at Lincoln High School before moving to Charlotte in 2021. Joel has coached at many different basketball camps and clinics in both the U.S. and abroad, including the Michael Jordan Flight School, Snow Valley Basketball School, and Yao Ming Hope School. He's a licensed USA basketball coach and has been part of USA Basketball Youth Development in various roles, as well as an on-court coach for the Chris Paul National Middle School Combine and Rising Stars. Additionally, for multiple summers, he was a camp director for Midwest Elite Basketball, leading satellite camps in over 15 states for athletes at foundational to elite levels. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Jack Agostino, head boys basketball coach at Bayshore High School in New York, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Be sure to grab a pen and paper before you listen to this episode with Joel Lincoln, the Basketball Barista. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to be joined by Basketball Barista. We tried to figure out what his best title was, and this is the one that we think best describes our guest, Joel Lincoln. Joel, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, thank you guys. Longtime listener, privilege and grateful to have the opportunity to join you guys here tonight.
We are excited to have you on. Joel and I have hooked up several times out at Snow Valley, so excited to have a fellow Snow Valley alum out here with us on the podcast. Joel, let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger.
So I've been playing. I mean, I grew up in a super small town in Iowa, and have two older brothers, younger sister from the third of four. And like, we lived in the country surrounded by cornfields. So I played all the sports. I mean, we were small town kids. So my brothers played all the sports. I played all, you know, following their footsteps. And in Iowa, you can actually, they have a split middle school season where you can wrestle and play basketball, which in Iowa, like, I know not all states, I believe Ohio is pretty big into wrestling, but in Iowa, like, it's a real deal. My cousin won state championships in Iowa, like, so it's a real deal. So I actually wrestled and played basketball in middle school. And then when I got to high school, like, I mean, I was in Orlando, I lived Penny Hardaway, Shaq in Orlando. when I was in high school, middle school, and like I just always loved the game, watching the Iowa Hawkeyes. I'm from Eastern Iowa, so that's just down the street. And then my dad's Iowa State alumni, watching the tournament, stuff like that. So the game, I've always been a huge fan, a student of the game. And that's from, middle elementary school. I still remember watching different March Madness games in elementary, middle school on the old rollout TV.
Hey, man, I'm just glad you don't shoot like a wrestler.
I've come a long way. But, the one thing I do like that I do really enjoy about wrestling is just like it's a 24/7 real deal thing. Like when you're trying to cut weight and manage weight, my oldest brother wrestled. And he's 6 years older than me. So and he's in high school cutting weight, doing all that stuff, managing his diet. Like, it takes incredible discipline to wrestle. And I definitely chose the better of the two sports to coach.
Was your brother in the plastic bag era wearing era?
Oh yeah. The sauna suits. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even Eastern Iowa, your small town Iowa kid, or just in Iowa in general, like wrestling's a real deal. And like, I mean, my uncles were at, like, I one of my dad wrestled, like there was, it was a real thing. So absolutely, it was cool. And then gotten in basketball in high school, was just an average and okay high school player. Attended Snow Valley as a camp, just loved getting better and really enjoyed the team part of it. I don't have a lot of hobbies. It's pretty much hoops. I enjoy coffee and then doing some hiking, a little traveling. Obviously,
hence
enjoy
the barista title, Joel. Hence the barista title. You like coffee?
Hey, absolutely. 1000%. Yeah, at Snow Valley, a fun little tradition we've actually had is now, like, my parents still being from still live in Iowa, so they have a coffee pot. They don't even drink coffee. So when I come back for Snow Valley, I gather, as I'm doing some different travels, get a little pound of coffee from here and there, and then give those coaches in the morning before those 6 a.m. Sessions. And some coaches are getting used to it, and that's just something we've added new to the new title and just adding to the camp in general and the camaraderie between coaches.
What's the best cup of coffee you ever had?
So I wish I could have gotten it later. I don't know if you're familiar with Kopi Luau. It's like $100 to $150 a pound of coffee.
Okay.
And are you guys familiar with it?
No.
So like it's from, I want to say like Indonesia, the cats eat the beans. They go through their digestive system. They get the beans out of the poop of the cat, and then they roast the beans. There's like no bite. It's super smooth. And it's like this huge delicacy, but like a pound of Kopi Luau coffee is like $120. One of the football coaches at Northwest Missouri State, where I went to college and was a manager, he got some for Christmas. Somebody gave him, and like that was part of my other duties as assigned, was being like, all the at Northwest, all of the coaches' offices, one long hallway, so everybody knows everybody, and there's one coffee pot in the football GA's like room. And so Coach Doral brought it in, and everybody that was in the office that day happened to get a cup of Kopi Luau. And I still remember how delicious it was and the notes and tremendous.
Nice. Nice. I can't say I'm not, Joel, at all a coffee drinker. So
I'm not allowed to drink coffee, Mike.
Yeah. Jason's on the no caffeine thing. So.
Well, different strokes for different folks. Yeah, understood. I drink water and coffee, but I go. Do love me a good cup of coffee at all hours of the day.
Got it. Makes sense. Well, I got to say, this is the first time we've ever talked coffee on the Hoopheads pod. So you've broken into new territory for us, if nothing else.
We have talked about soup, Mike, on this podcast.
Yes, we have talked about soup, but only soup being thrown.
At coaches. So
not being eaten, but thrown by J.R. Smith. But
that's fundraiser gone wrong.
That's it. All right. So let's go back to high school. As a player, what's your favorite memory as a high school player?
As a high school player, I mean, my junior year, we won a couple games in a row, and I was, just coming off the bench. I got to play. We played against a couple teams, and I got to had a good run of minutes, had a couple handful of double-digit games in a row. So that little run was probably my best high school memory basketball wise, to be very clear and be self-aware. I was extremely, extremely average, just kind of worked hard. And like I said, just a student of the game, and was always, you know, asking questions and being curious and trying to, you know, get better, number one. But also for me, it was very social, and the game brought a lot to me, not only of the value of playing, but the friendships, the camaraderie with teammates. And like, you know, being from a small town, you know, we played together from a young age, basically all the way through, which especially in this day is just unheard of. So, you know, just as a whole piece of the locker room, those guys were good. You know, we had a great time. Obviously, we could have won a few more games, but.
Did you always know you wanted to be a coach?
I did. So, and so when I attended Snow Valley a couple of years as a camper, knew it was a thing. There was a couple older players in the program that had gone to it and had told me about it when I was in middle school. And so I'd gone a couple of years, and then Coach Showalter coached when he was at Mid Prairie. I went to Duran High School. Coach Show and Mid Prairie were in our high school conference. So we played them. We played them at Mid Prairie. And then like I knew Coach Show, like not knew him, but like knew he did Snow Valley. And I was like, hey, I want to get into coaching. What should I do? And he's like, well, you should just come volunteer, you know, or come be a counselor this summer at Snow Valley and like, you know, be a manager in college or play, you know, at that time. And playing wasn't really an option. There was a little D3 interest, but like it was very much a stretch. So I knew I wanted to get into coaching and, you know, teaching, coaching. That was always my passion, helping other people and, you know, just improving, I think, has always been something that's been fascinating. And as a visual kinesthetic guy, like seeing yourself getting better, working on things has always been rewarding in basketball. Right. As we know, it's a beautiful game. And as you're improving, you get to see it.
All right. So tell me about your first experience at Snow Valley. This is the summer after your senior year. Is that right?
Yeah. So okay. these were the real weeks. There was 5 weeks and there were 5 days. And like that last day, it wasn't like out the door at noon. Like you got done at like 4 or 5, and then the next camp would usually start the next day. So it was a little bit different. And I did that as a counselor. Like it was whatever needed to have happen, whether it was an airport run or waking kids up was obviously a big one. Anybody that wasn't at roll call in the morning, anything like that, airing up basketballs, running this here, running that there, moving boxes. And so, yeah, that was the beginning. And you know, the cool thing about that was like when the clinics got started, whatever setup I, you know, helped with is I kind of got to choose which one I watched or coached at, or, you know, helped out at a basket. And so that was, you know, as a guy that's been to Snow Valley, you get to see people operate at a high level, which as a teacher and as a coach was very impactful, and just seeing the caliber of coaches that were there each year in that, you know, as a guy that not floated, but had a lot of different things, you got to spend a little bit of time with everybody, which was great.
And obviously that, I'm sure, kickstarted even more of the interest, probably doubled down on the fact that, hey, I know I wanted to get into coaching. And then obviously you have to make a decision about where you're going to go to college. And then, as you said, maybe you might've had an opportunity to play, but you obviously chose to go the route of getting involved and being a manager. So talk a little bit about your college decision and then how you eventually connected with Coach McCollum, who multi-time national championship coach, obviously a really good guy to be able to work under and learn from. So just tell us a little bit about how you made the decision to go to Northwest Missouri State and then just how you got connected to Coach McCollum.
So just going to Northwest, I was, I also ran cross country and track, and I was honestly a lot better at cross country and track, athletically. So I was getting, they reached out and were recruiting me. So I went down there on a track and field visit, and I was like, not feeling great. I have a couple of medical things that, I knew I didn't want to run, but I was like, I'm going to go. Like I didn't decide and where I was going to school until like April of my senior year. Like I didn't take a visit until after winter break. So I was definitely like a last second decision and like, hey, what's going to kind of work out type guy. And so when I went to Northwest, like I knew pretty quickly, like, hey, this is going to be a good time. And then I didn't like know anything really. And like, cause Coach Mackey was his first year, got hired at 28. And so I believe when I visited, like their coach had either left or just gotten fired. So there really wasn't anybody there at the time, which I have, you know, now gotten to know Austin Meyer, who's the head women's coach there, but he was used to be the men's assistant. A guy named Chad Van Reason, who was at Iowa Western Community College. Like those guys were kept over from Coach Tapp's previous staff when Matt came in. But yeah, Coach Mack at 20, or Coach McCollum, excuse me. He was 28, and you know, I didn't know him, and I was very immature as a college freshman coming in. And I just, you know, I really want to coach, and I'd, you know, love to come and help out. And I'd emailed him a couple times and like he hadn't responded, whatever. And then it kind of cocked out show. He's like, why don't you just go talk to him? And like, you know, I'd never, like, that hadn't struck me that maybe I should just go talk to this guy instead of emailing him. So I go over and he's like, yeah, like, here's kind of the deal. Like, you're not going to travel. It's a volunteer position. Like, sweep the floor, set the clock, whatever we need. Like, cool. And like, you're probably not going to get told thank you and all that stuff. So he's like, if you decide that's something you want to get into, he's like, but you know, if you stick with it, like, you know, you'll be treated with respect by everyone. And like, cause I don't, like Coach Mack outside of my dad has been amazing, like probably the biggest impact outside of my dad on me. So I don't want to like, but I mean, he basically laid out the real deal. Like you want, if you want to do this, it's going to be hard and you're going to be putting in a lot of work and like, there's not going to be a whole lot of benefits to it up front, but it is an opportunity. So if you want to do it, you know, come back tomorrow and you'll start then. So, you know, went home. When I say went home, went back to my dorm, took like 2 seconds, like, am I going to do this? And I'm like, well, I don't know what else I'm really going to do. So might as well. And so, yeah, showed up the next day and like, that was the start of it. And, you know, we were, you know, Coach Mack has since won, yeah, 3 national titles and had incredible success. And like, it's awesome. And I'm so like happy for him, the program, and like the guys that like Sean Cooper is still playing, Elijah Allen, who's a Columbus kid, who, you know, those guys, Jake Reinders, Jake Peterson, like some of those guys that laid the foundation. And now, like, I think 2 years ago, we were all back for a golf tournament, like after they'd won the national title, and like, you know, just to hang out and catch up with those guys. And I, you know, if anybody that's been in a locker room, especially a college locker room, like that's different. You got people, we had guys all from all over the world. You know, we had guys from, you know, Coops from St. Louis. I'm from nowhere, Iowa. We got, you know, just, you know, a couple guy, a guy from Poland, guy from Lithuania. Like it's just an incredible life experience, which was awesome. And then, yeah, with Coach Mack, like we just worked. And, you know, the first few years we weren't great, but I think one thing that was super impactful and you don't realize at the time was, you know, you're seeing him figure out how to be a head coach because he's a young head coach. He's 28 and we got guys on our team that are 24, 25. So, you know, especially early on seeing somebody build it and then to see the success they've now, you know, built to and will continue to build on, like, it just proves the process. And that was, you know, a great, great process while I was there. And now obviously gone on to do great and better things, which is tremendous.
So tell us a little bit about day-to-day, kind of what you had to do. Obviously, some people know sort of the role of what a manager does, but some other people may not. And at every school, it may be a little bit different. So was it really as dire as he described that you were just going to be doing laundry and no one was going to say thank you to you, or did it end up being a little bit better than that?
I mean, yeah. So like so anybody that's been around a program that's like, you know, I want to say upstart, but like, you know, the Northwest job when they had won, they had made the conference tournament the first year we didn't make the conference tournament. So you're just seeing a lot in the day to day. Like my first year, I mean, we're having long practices. We're doing, you know, guys, and we've got a whole new team of people coming in. We got new recruits. You've got freshmen. We got new staff. So there's that dynamic playing out of, you know, the former coaches, guys. But Coach Mack played for Coach Tapp, so very similar vision in how they see the game and mental toughness and things. So the first year was, yeah, really, I didn't travel, went to practice. I missed one practice, and that was before life in the balance. So, you know, we got 3 days for Christmas, and I took one extra day on the front end. And I think, you know, as you're building that respect, just like, you know, we all have bumped into people along the road and say, yeah, we want to do this. And I thought it was very wise of Mac not to just be like, oh, yeah, we'd love to have you and anybody's welcome, of like, hey, like, this is really what it's going to be. And then as it progressed, I mean, my junior year, we went to Hawaii. He took me, all expenses paid. I got a room. And the one thing that I always, valued was like everyone, like there was mutual respect amongst myself and all the players of like, and I just remember one time where a player was a little bit disrespectful to me. And like, it was instant, like Coach Mack and all the staff and, a few of the other players were very quick to make sure like that's not how we're going to treat anybody, even though he's just a manager. So like, there was definitely some like, yeah, you're like, we're doing laundry in a Holiday Inn in Nowhere, Missouri at 3 a.m. And like, this is the third time because we can't get some practice clips dry. But like, it was amazing. We went to the NCAA tournament my junior year. Like, that was amazing. Like, and just to see, and like, for me, what I really needed, especially going to college from a small town, going to, there was, I think, about 10,000 students in Northwest. Like, so for me, that was like a huge school, but, perspectives, everything, maybe not so much now. But I needed that accountability and, building, especially with those guys. I didn't really know anybody when I went there. So, building a community, helping support academically, all of that stuff. I mean, by the time I was a senior, like travel wise, like I was doing, I had the opportunity to work with player development. I started doing that my junior year, even my freshman year, like, as different people reached out to the program for workouts, like, the assistants weren't going to do it, but that gave me an opportunity. I wasn't getting paid to be a manager, but I, would train kids and they'd give me feedback and, just different things. So just being around it. And when you don't have a lot of skill, I didn't really have another opportunity to, it was either that or not coach. So, I guess I could have done a high school gig, but, I really knew at that time I was very motivated to get into the college game and, build that career out. So it was great. And like I said, great experience. A lot of those guys are still my great friends that I talk to pretty regularly still to this day.
Do you feel like as those 4 years went on that you got to sit in more on coaches' meetings and that mm-hmm. kind of thing? Was that something that sort of progressed over time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously you got full access. Like, it got to the point where, like, from about my junior year on, Coach Mack would usually get in about 6:30. And most mornings I'd have 8 o'clock class and I'd always pop up, make the first pot of coffee at 7:30, say what's up. And like, especially my senior year, we did that most mornings and we talked about anything. He taught me how to watch film. And I mean, as my time dedication to the program and respect from players, from coaches, and everything grew, like the natural access of like, okay, Joel, like, what do you think we should do? Not what we think we should do, but hey, on this timeout, where's this guy shoot better from? She shoot on the left, left corner, right corner. We're going to drop this play. Like, does Zelo shoot it better from here, from there? Like, just those little insights and, just building that trust of, hey, they give you a task. Okay. You have this scout. Okay. So when you go do it, do you like do it to the best of your ability? Do you like kind of do it? Are you nervous when you're presenting it? Or are you really trying to, make it your own and take what you've learned? And I thought Coach Mack did a great job of developing that, of like, making sure that the balls were where they're supposed to be, whichever gym we're supposed to be in, the floor was swept, all that to the clock was set. And here's how shot clock works. All the basic stuff. Like, I didn't know anything. Like, I still remember messing up like the shot clock, the first like little bit, cause I didn't realize like when it hits the rim, you got to reset it. So I was first team all stooge and like, I'm glad they gave me the opportunity. But yeah, like I, as my skill grew, there was trust that was grown in relationships and it was natural. And as things got better, and that's one thing that I really value, seeing where the program's at now is seeing where it was. And having that belief, and anybody knows or has studied or talked to Coach Mack knows he's a big fan of Good to Great, and that book I still read probably once a year, if not every other year, and just reminding myself that good isn't the enemy of great. And when we thought my junior year, we won, we first 2 years we make the NCAA or we don't make the conference tournament. Third year, my junior year, we won the league, made the NCAA tournament. And like lost in the first round. And like, I remember like we were proud and like, Then senior year, we had a couple, Coop was injured, had a couple other things, got second in league, and then lost in the conference championship. So we didn't get to go to the NCAA tournament. Like, you know, people were like, okay, like, hey, we guys are doing things well. And then they've won it every year since I've left. And I left in 2013. So, like, in just seeing how the belief that you build and you got to do it with exceptional people, and to, you know, really see that organically come together. And like, you know, I had no idea. And I don't think, you know, maybe, I bet Mac probably knew at the time he was going to go do great things. But like, even my junior year when we won it, no one was saying like Ben McCollum's going to be this, that, or the other. This program is going to go here. Like, just to see like that is the process and that is what sustained success looks like. And to have that example and that, you know, relationship with not only Coach Mac, but Coach Meyer and just everybody around that program and guys that have since moved on to being other, you know, college coaches, head coaches, other places, and high school coaches and, you know, different places. Like, it was great. And like I said, those guys have been awesome. I still won't go back every summer. Last summer, Coach Mac and I got, I think, about 18 miles and he was preparing for a marathon just on a random Friday. So yeah, that was a great experience. And yeah, I still enjoy, look back on that and with, you know, very impactful and really has molded me into the coach and person that, you know, I've seen and understand the process, and like having had that, been there, been a part of it, and to now have still talking with those guys, but seeing what it is from the outside, you know, that's the blueprint. And to have that now entering my 30s is just awesome, you know, coaching wise, and especially with kids. Those lessons and that example, like, you come from a place of confidence because you lived it and you know it works, as opposed to like you read it in a book. So
what made and makes Coach McCollum such a special coach, and what are some things that you took from him that are still part of your coaching today?
You got to work every day, work, win, loss, whatever. You got to like, you got to know who you are. You got to be who you are. Keep the main thing, the main thing. Be real. I think like the thing that he does the absolute best is his player relationships. I mean, the amount of time that a guy would just pop in and sit on the couch and BS, and how Mac is, and he's always been like, he would, and it's annoying because there's times where like, if you need to get a hold of him, he may not call you back or whatnot for a couple of days just because he doesn't look at his phone. Like, I don't know if he still does it, but he used to put that thing in his drawer, and like, if you need to see Mac, like, you knew he was going to be in the office. It was either there, he was down getting a lift or playing noon ball, whatever. Like, just the incredible work and the dedication. And then just being around, like, being in the office. So if a guy stopped by, you're there. Those player relationships and how he coached really good players. I think there's an art to that. And I think he does a really, really good job. I think he's an exceptional communicator. Yeah, I think like those, from, I'd say definitely the work and the relationships, and then, you know, just being calm. Yeah, the relationships are huge, especially when now they've, I mean, Trevor Hudgens is in the NBA. Like, he was averaging 25 in the G League. Like, he's going to be in the NBA. And he coached that guy, and, you know, he's finding talent. I think he does a great job, especially with everybody, but especially with guards and with teaching space. And I think that just comes again from the work, and like, he watches a stupid amount of film. Like, I don't like, if I gave it even the guess, like, he'll be talking about this, that, or the other. And like, I'm a development guy. I love development, and like, I do enjoy the X's and O's, but like, of all the things I enjoy coaching wise, like, that's like middle of the pack. But I mean, like, and that's why he's so good. He's been doing that since he got the job in 2009. He's been watching six hours minimum of film a day, every day in the summer, watching it all day, talking to coaches. Like, there's no secret. Like, the work works every single time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you think about what it takes to be successful, obviously you start there with, you got to put the time in. And any coach, I don't care what level you're talking about, you can be talking about a club coach, you can be talking about a high school coach, you can be talking about a college coach, you talk about a pro coach. I mean, at any level, it starts with, you got to be willing to put in the time that's necessary and put in the work that's necessary in order to compete. And I think that on all those levels, probably more so even on the high school level at this point than I think the college level has always been like this. But I think the baseline for what you have to do as a high school coach is much higher than it was 15 or 20 years ago in terms of the expectation outside of the season and getting your guys in to work out or getting open gym or all that kind of thing. And so the profession, as you said, it rewards the guys who put the time in and put the work in. And so I think that for sure is a lesson well learned when you start thinking about what you were able to experience in your career. And then, as you said, you get done and you graduate, and now you're looking at, okay, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go with this thing? And obviously you said you were leaning towards college because that's where your experience was. Tell me a little bit about how you get to East Central University and what that looks like in terms of your experience there as a GA.
So East Central was a cool and unique experience. Getting done at Northwest, I was going interviewing for a handful of different GA positions, knew that's where I wanted to take my career. And I wanted to go and, you know, I interviewed for a handful of Division I positions, and just didn't get it, you know, for whatever reason. And I'm grateful that for my time at East Central, so Thomas Brock, who is now the head coach at Columbia College, he had been the GA at Northwest while I was there, and he had been then became the full-time assistant at East Central. And so in that, he knew I was looking, he got that job, he called me, and I was actually working Snow Valley, Missouri with Coach Neff, was helping those guys out. Thomas called me, called Coach Havens the next day, and then finished up day two of Snow Valley, drove down 8 hours to Ada, Oklahoma, interview with Coach Havens, offered me the job, and then went back to working camp, finished up Snow Valley, Missouri, and then did a couple Snow Valleys in Iowa. And then, yeah, I moved down to Ada, Oklahoma. So it was just like a very quick, very came about very quickly because there was, I'd interviewed Oklahoma State and it was, I'd been to Oklahoma once before that. I interviewed at Cameron University, which is in Lawton, Oklahoma, for a GA position, Oklahoma State, obviously in Stillwater, and then East Central University. So I had Oklahoma on the mind for whatever reason afterwards and went down there, and it was a completely different league coming from the MIAA. And people will roll their eyes when you say this, and because Division II, I love Division II basketball. I think it's great. And obviously coming from the MIAA, if you're not familiar, like Northwest has won the last three national championships, they haven't won the most recent one. But the MIAA is a really good league, in my opinion. Some people will say it's this, that, or the third. But going from the MIAA, which is fully funded league, everybody has 10 fulls for the, you know, within maybe one that, you know, travels a little bit nicer, things like that. And then you go down to the GAC, which is basically a brand new league. And it's, you know, a lot more condensed. All your games are in Oklahoma and Arkansas. And like, I don't know if you've ever driven through the natural state, but we had a little mini bus. And so when I was at GA, we got to drive most of the time. So I got to drive the minibus through the natural state, which was an experience in itself. So, but no, it was a great experience down at ECU, Ada, Oklahoma, interesting place. Definitely was good for me. I needed to go, you know, that was good for me. It was a little, you know, cause, Northwest Missouri State was about 5 hours from the crib. And then Ada was about 8 or 9. So it was good. I needed to kind of get away from a little bit of stuff and go grow up, which was important. And like working for Coach Havens, he had just won a national championship at Drea as an assistant in the GLVC. And that's when he got the head coaching job down there. And then he brought on Coach Brock, obviously myself. And so, you know, Coach Mack at the time was very, I mean, we were winning games in low 40s, like we're points per possession, but we weren't talking about offense. We were talking about defense. Like, it, and so then to go play, you know, go coach with Coach Havens, he's, you know, we run pure motion offense and we play a lot in practice and we're going to coach on the fly, was awesome. Like, it was completely different. It was, you know, recruiting areas. We were a lot in Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and then Dallas, Fort Worth, which Dallas, I mean, great basketball still. So those were kind of our big recruiting areas. I got to dip my foot into those a little bit. Learned a lot about college academics, learned a lot about player development. And down there was, you know, lot different in terms of just your resources around. Like, we had a full-time strength conditioning guy, and he's great and still there. But just like, we got a smaller training room, so that means less stem time, you know, all the different stuff that goes into it. Definitely got a different perspective being down there. And, you know, and we turned that, helped turn that around in, you know, 3 years. They made the NCAA tournament. Braxton Reeves was Division II All-American. You know, in my first year there, he missed because he had a split kneecap in a car accident. So just to see that turn around from us, you know, the previous like 5 years, they had won like 12 games. We won 17 our first year, 19 the second year, lost on a half court shot in the GAC championship on just, you know, kid that hit a half court shot to win the game, you know, and had that shot not gone, then we won the NCAA tournament the second year. So just, you know, seeing, you know, being that 4 year with Coach Mack and really seeing how he built it to then seeing how Coach Havens built it. And I won't say quicker. It was, you know, every situation situational. It was just a different situation, much different league in the GAC, a lot more transfer heavy. MIAA at the time, especially, was a lot more high school, more development. Whereas GAC, I mean, Arkansas Tech, like Coach Carlskin was, I mean, bringing in 8 transfers a year, you know, and in that league, most teams had 1 or 2 former Division I players on MIAA. Most of them had 1. Most had a lot of guys that could have played at that league. So just seeing a different league, different experience, especially seeing it with Coach Havens. We spent at least 20 minutes a day doing guards forwards, and I had the forwards. So I learned a lot about big development, and I'm, you know, very thankful for that experience now. But I definitely, as a coach, got a ton better just from a coaching. You know, with Mac, I learned a lot about defense, about angles and, you know, switching, communication, different things. And then with Coach Havens, pure, I mean, we're pure motion, so we're going to make call a little entry, but otherwise, like, let's get on the 2s, 4s, and 6s, and like, let's kind of roll. So it was great, great experience just to see the game again, like from somebody that, and Coach Mac is, does exceptional things with offense, but at the time we were just much more defense oriented to then Coach Havens. We're trying to score games in the 90s and, you know, mid 80s, trying to get them up. So just a little bit different. Still competing, definitely at East Central, just a little bit different way about trying to go to win, which for, especially as a young coach, was great to see two different ways and to both see both ways be successful.
As you're going through the experience with both of those guys, are you taking notes? Are you keeping a notebook, a journal to kind of help you to remember and recall all the things that you're learning? Did you have a system for how you kind of categorized and just kept yourself organized when it comes to that learning process?
Yeah. So we had, so Coach Havens would, I mean, and Mac did the same thing of like, I still have them probably in a binder somewhere of all the practice plans with all my notes. I mean, Coach Mac was always big on writing stuff down. He taught me, like I said, he taught me a lot of things, but writing stuff down, being organized. He, I mean, he always had his list of things and he'd cross them off that he had to get done every day. So, you know, success leaves clues. So, hey, you should probably be writing stuff down, doing that. And, so a lot of those practice plans and then just your notes. And I think as I've gotten more clinics and had more experiences, more platform of a coach of, you know, you get those messages that you got all the time and, but still going through it. I've got some files and when I got done every year, I would kind of write, you know, do different themes after every game. I would always do like a why we win, why we lost, what we got to get better at. I think I started doing that at Northwest just because we had lost. And obviously it's not my job as a manager to know here's what we need. But like there was always conversations. And around that time is when I had a lot of respect and had gained some respect from the staff. And not that they were asking me why we win, why we lost, but there was times where, you know, we're talking pick and roll coverage and they're going to look and say, what'd you see? And just, you know, really having an opinion. So I started doing that around my junior year because I was traveling. My junior year, I started to travel to all the games. So then I kind of had those consistent routines.
All right. So when you finish at East Central, what's the plan? What's the career path? What are you thinking about? And then what's your next step?
So my goal was to intern in the NBA. Interviewed with the Mavericks. the Thunder and the Orlando Magic, and interviewed. Cool experience, like a little bit. I mean, it was, I'm obviously didn't get him. And then had an opportunity to coach at Lake Oswego High School out in Oregon. And went out there, pursued that with some connections with Nike and things. And so it was kind of crazy how the whole thing worked out from a just logistical, because I guess one thing that I do want to touch on is like every summer. And I think one thing that really helped in my development was every summer. My summer job was to coach college or to coach basketball. So came up on the camp circuit like every summer from, I mean, I did snowball after I graduated high school. And then after that, like started with just a couple, University of Florida, University of Illinois, Hoop Mountain, which is no longer a camp, Snow Valley, to then, you know, doing some things in the summer with Hoop Group, University of Maryland, Texas, Florida, Minnesota, you know, doing some extensive travel, Michael Jordan flight school, some of that. So in the summer, all of those connections and, you know, things like that led to a path out there, which was awesome. And that's actually where I spent the next 6 years. So didn't quite get those NBA gigs, which in hindsight's 2020, like, I don't know if that opportunity is ever going to arise. But I know I probably would not have been, I would have been very poor at it at 25, and I don't know how I would have responded to that. Like, because it was a dream, and like, you know, anytime you're working towards something, obviously you want to accomplish your goals and dreams. And like, you know, especially as a kid coming from, I'm very fortunate. I had to come from a two parent household. My parents were awesome, had great opportunity, but like, you know, to go and be on the cusp of that dream and then to not get it was obviously pretty challenging. But I think having done it, knowing what I know about attrition rate in the NBA, like it very well, even if I would have done a good job, which I'm not confident I would have, could very well have been in a 1 year gig. And then I don't know what I would have done after that, having experienced that little bit of success. So yeah, then moved out to Oregon, to coach some high school hoops and do some things with Nike, which was awesome.
What'd you like about the high school game compared to the college game? Let's focus on the positive part of it.
Oh shoot. Yeah. No, I mean, I was very happy. So had I not moved to Oregon, like I was going to go coach Showalter was at Iowa City High at that time. And I was just really looking for an opportunity. Like it was a good time. But so moving out to Oregon, like it was fun. I mean, in terms of development, like I taught elementary PE, which is the Rolls Royce of teaching jobs, in my opinion. And so like, that was awesome. I got to help out with youth clinics. I had, you know, we did a breakfast club, developed a couple players through that, and really allowed me to kind of have an imprint on a few kids' lives and just have that platform. And, you know, as a guy, like when I got my degree at Northwest, like I knew in the back of my mind that like, if you aren't a college coach or not in the NBA, like being a teacher and a coach isn't a bad gig by any stretch. And especially now with different things, I obviously don't know at the time are going to come about, but I knew I loved the game and I knew I wanted to keep coaching. And I knew I loved player development. Like at that point, that was one thing. And one reason I didn't want to continue in college was, you know, I enjoyed recruiting, but I didn't love recruiting. The relationship piece was awesome, but at recruiting Division II, and I'll speak to my experience, you could be recruiting a guy that, you know, maybe isn't getting a lot of love and it's to your benefit. And you spend, you know, 6-8 months, you know, investing in that kid, investing the time in, and then this, as soon as a, you know, even a just okay Division I, and you feel like you've got a pretty good setup that would benefit that kid. And, you know, they're going to, in your mind, go somewhere and lose a bunch of games or not have a great experience is like very challenging. And I didn't deal well with that. But, you know, obviously every kid makes the right decision as they should for their college. But I knew I was in on player development, seeing that at the college game. And we put a ton of hours in at East Central in the evenings. And like, I learned a lot from those guys. We had a few older players, and especially like Chris Fisher, Braxton Reeves, like those guys taught me the way that they see the game as a non-player. That was invaluable. And Sterling Thomas, like some of those guys really teach you how they saw the game and how they see the game as a basketball player. And as a guy that never played, took a shot at a college, you know, never shot a meaningful basketball on a college floor, to, you know, and those guys were great at communicating, seeing what they were doing. I knew leaving East Central, like I wanted to do player development, and I had been working kids out and doing summer camps at that point for about 5-6 years, and knew I had a real passion for that. And knew as a high school coach, elementary PE teacher, like I would have a gym I could do some workouts at, and I'd still be coaching, helping kids, which was great.
What's the key to good player development in your mind?
Having a plan and knowing. Well, I think having a number one, knowing what the progression is, knowing how much time it's going to take to actually get good at something, having the discipline and the patience to fight boredom, to fight players' poor attitudes, to teach why this is why we're doing this and why we're going to continue to do it. I think those two hand in hand, if you can have a plan, you can tell a kid, here's why we're doing it, here's what we're going to. I think number one, that sets you up for a development, because having a plan and communicating the plan are, you know, the first two steps of leadership. And then from a developmental standpoint, making sure we're doing it right every time. Like, we're doing it right every time within reason. Like, I coach a second grade team, a fifth grade team, eighth grade, do high school player development for a couple clubs here. Like, there's a different level of right. When we're doing line drills with third graders, it's don't travel. When we're doing it line drills with a high school team, it's, yeah, we got to catch with our knees bent. We got to be in a stance, ready to make a play. But knowing what the objective, what the main thing of that drill is, and making sure if kids are doing it wrong, you're correcting them.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point.
Because, like, in, like, we'll probably touch on this a little bit later with game shots. Like, if the drill doesn't make a player, the player makes the drill. Like, even if you're doing the wrong stuff, but you're doing it with great habits, you're doing a 75 dribble move, like jump shot. But if your dribble moves are hard, you know, if your hard dribbles, your eyes are up and whatever, like, and your form is good on your shot, like, that's not the way I think you should develop, but you're going to undoubtedly get better. So doing it the correct way and knowing what you're trying to get out, because, you know, especially in teaching elementary PE, like, we, as a coach, you can find something wrong every time. And I think it's pretty easy that, like, if your team's not experiencing success, you're frustrated with something, you're maybe going through with a player, you may have a parent, whatever, like, life shit could be happening. Sorry for cursing. I just realized this is probably a family program.
It's all good.
But, you know, just having a plan and then making sure we're holding kids accountable to what actually matters. And yeah, those third graders should catch in a triple threat position every single time and dribble with their eyes up. But if they're worried about those four things, I'm only worried about them not traveling. We're going to work on dribbling in our next little session, or, you know what I mean? So I think good development is correcting. I think good development is having a lot of different tools to teach the same thing in a different, slightly different way. I think good development is repetitions. And I'm speaking from a, like, shooting scoring perspective, working on your habits before you work on results, and understanding how to work on habits and what you should be looking for in your form shooting. Instead of looking for just makes, maybe look for swishes. And, like, once you attain a level, bump up to the next level. Okay, you know, we're going to start with, I got to make 10 form shots from the side, front side, right? Okay, cool. Make 10. Boom, boom. Once I'm getting that done in a couple minutes, all right, now you got to swish 5 from each of those spots. It's going to take you a little bit longer. It's going to take whatever, right? But now we're focused on swishing. Now we got to swish 2 in a row, whatever it is, like, finding that next level to challenge yourself. And kids are no, like, I shouldn't say are no longer. The game, the cell phone provides the game. They don't have to come up with a creative game in their head anymore. They don't have to search for a level because Flappy Bird has it in there already. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think from a coaching perspective too, kind of what I hear you saying is that you have to find the balance between, hey, you could find something, like you said, you can find something wrong in almost every situation, right? But it's just a matter of how often do you stop that? Do you correct it? That's a fine line. I know that's something that we've talked to a lot of coaches about in terms of just even in their practice setting, where you're going up and down, you're playing 5-on-5. And one of the questions I always like to ask is, how do you know when you stop it, or how much do you stop play to correct something that you see that you want fixed versus letting the action flow and then going back and talking about it or having a player come off the floor and talk about it with a head coach or an assistant coach. And I think mostly the answer always is that's sort of the art of coaching, right? Is trying to figure that out and just making sure that you have that balance where you don't let everything go, but yet you can't obviously stop it for every single thing. And I think that that's true in a team practice setting, but I think it's also true in a player development workout setting where you can bog a player down with a million details. It's almost like you have to pick and say, okay, we're going to focus on, like you said, this one thing. So here we're working with young kids. It's just don't travel and figure out how do you get to the point where kids don't travel. And then some of those other points that you're talking about, maybe just by telling the kid, hey, don't travel, maybe now they do start to bend their knees or they do start to come to a stop in such a way that they stay on balance. And even though those are things that you might be able to point out to an older player, just given it the general rule to a younger kid sometimes is more beneficial because they kind of figure out how do they get to that end game. It's just, that's the art of coaching. I think it's a fine line there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the last part with development is, you know, you got to get past, some people say hard, some people say boring, but like get past your comfort zone. And like, I guess two things, one thing that you thought of, and I'm not going to put the coach that said it is like, and I, even when I was a head coach, I really believe this is don't look at your worst player during practice. Because if you, I shouldn't say don't look, excuse me. The quote is, don't spend too much time looking at your worst player. Otherwise you'll think practice sucks.
Right. Yep.
Like if you're like, and I think Coach Calipari said it like, don't get mad at Derrick Rose for not scoring 30. Get mad at the other guy for missing three free throw blockouts and two, you know, a layup. Like, I think just being fair and understanding that you're coaching everyone the same, but also like, I know my eighth player, if I'm expecting him to go and didn't hit 20, not realistic, but if I expect him to make, you know, 50% open corner threes, like, there's a reason why you're our eighth man, buddy. And right, if you want to become our fifth man, you make 3 out of 4. You know what I mean? Like, there's just that part of it. And I think being honest and giving as much, you know, data, I'm big, you know, especially for development. I've been on this for about a year and a half now, is every time we're in the gym, we're shooting 100 threes and we're tracking it. If we're doing an hour workout every 15, 20 minutes, you're going to shoot 25 threes. And like, we're going to know every time. And like for kids, I think it's really important because it gives them confidence. And I, Tony and I just talked about this last night on our podcast of like, if you go shoot 100 track threes every day this summer, number one, you're already going to be in the gym. You're going to work just a little bit more if you're doing it every single day. But, you know, let's say a guy like me who's got a broke jumper, I'm going to go out and I'll make 31 out of 100 tomorrow, right? But by the end of the summer, even if I'm practicing it the wrong way, I shoot 100 of them every day. Like, I'm confident I get to mid 40s
right
on a good day. And like, you know how much confidence that gives a kid? And like, I think things like that are important from a developmental, having a few things that are like your vitamins, your dailies, whatever you want to call them. But I think especially for high school programs, and if I go ever get back into high school coaching, I will definitely be doing this because we did like a variation of it at LaSalle prep when I was in Oregon. Of like we did shooting, but I mean, you can get a group of three, can all get, you know, 25 threes in about 3 or 4 minutes. Like, you know, 10 wing corner, 5 on a little 7 cut, 10 on the opposite wing corner. You know, first guy shoots, second guy, you know, each one of those guys, 10 shots are going to be quick. After you shoot, you get the rebound or pass or all that. Like doing that, shooting those 100 threes, like, and especially now in the day of like kids taking so much personally, like just the wall of truth on that. Like, yo, your group of three, everybody's going to record their score. We're just going to do this every day. And we're going to see what the data says. So, you know, if it's not me that's saying you can't coach, or excuse me, it's not you, it's not me saying you can't shoot. It's you proving you can't shoot, or you proving you can shoot and I'm wrong.
Right.
Yep. But there's no, like, I've found the best coaching I do is when I change rules or when I manipulate things from, like, when I say manipulate, like, off at a layup's worth 5 points now, your team's going to stop shooting threes. Offensive rebounds worth double points. Layup putback, that's worth 4, not 2. Like, manipulating those things And like you have, you can give kids and players, whether it's kids, when I say kids, I mean third grade kids or high school players or players, college guys, pros of like, yo, like that's really what it's like when you give up that offensive rebound. That guy 9 times out of 10 is going to dunk it and put it back. Or that girl is going to get it and put it back and one. So now it's a 5-point swing the other way. So, you know, anytime you can change those drills, and I shouldn't say change the drill, but like give it a standard or a score to remove you versus player. It's player versus drill, and then drill versus standard. You set the standard, the player comes up to the standard, and the drill gives that little buffer in between. So it's not personal.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I think when you can do that, and obviously as a coach, you're talking about in a practice setting with your team, if there's some particular thing that you want to work on, then you can, as you said, manipulate the drill to make sure that you're rewarding the particular skill that you're working on, which is another way of not really focusing in on, okay, how do we do that? But just, hey, let's do it. Like if we're going to reward an offensive rebound and a putback with double points, we don't even necessarily have to stop and talk about, okay, what's our offensive rebounding technique, right? It's more just, hey, man, I'm extra motivated and now I'm just going to go get the ball, which ultimately, right? I mean, that's kind of what it's all about, is having players figure out how do I do these things? And yeah, you could stop it or you can just, hey, let's manipulate the drill. And now suddenly we're getting a lot more of this behavior or this skill that we're trying to work on, or that's something that either is a strength that we want to double down on, or maybe it's a weakness that we want to try to improve with our team. And then you think about it in an individual workout. Again, you can do the same thing where you manipulate the drill and you can get kids working on a particular skill. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. I'm curious, when you were talking about doing the keeping track of 100 shots, whatever, if you're working a kid out. So let's say you got a client that you're working with once a week or twice a week, and every workout you're trying to track their shooting. This is one of the things that I'm not doing very much training anymore, but when I was, I always was like, okay, I want to be able to track this stuff. But then I always found like, okay, me trying to count in my head of how many shots the kid's making and then stop after it's over and get their chart and mark it and write it down. And then I found myself, instead of focusing on what the kid was doing and their technique and trying to help them, that I was just counting shots and rebounding more than I was actually coaching them. And so I always found that to be difficult. So I'm curious, just what's your method like for making that happen?
I just call it out as they're going.
Okay.
Like how I view, like we work on, and so I, one thing I've really pivoted to and really trying to specialize and have an impact in is shooting. Because I think there's a lot of kids that want to shoot the basketball well and they want to score, but they never work on shooting. So I think working on your shooting, I think when I'm talking about shooting, I'm talking about your habits, like your form shooting. I talk about like that's technique, right? I come in, I've got my toes, I got my knees, I got my, my knees bent because my knees get angles in my ankles, angles in my hips, angles in my hips, get my elbow in, not my pocket, right? So it all starts with my knees, having an angle in my knees. That's, first thing we're going to talk about. And then giving those things that are actionable along the way. That's what shooting is, right? So we're going to really be focused on the process of shooting the basketball. We're going to focus on your follow through. And then we're going to do a few little things of, manipulating your footwork. Okay, left, right, you're going to get, three swishes going left, right. Okay, now we're going to get three swishes going right, left. Okay, now we're going to work on, box drills or pivots. We're going to make this many in a row. We're just going to get this many reps. We're going to keep track of our shooting percentage. One of the things I like in terms of counting and things, like I am gifted with math. Like, I can keep track of things off the top of my head. And then at the end of every workout, like, I tell the kid and everybody with a pulse and above like 7 years old has a cell phone. So I just have them put it in their notes. And like, I'll just remember like first time they got 12,
right?
Second 25, they got 17. So now they're at, you know, 29. Okay. Next one, they made 4, whatever it is. Like, and then at the end, it's like, okay, how many we should, you made this many today, put it in your phone. And like that and the box drills are two things that I always do. In box drills, like, I basically kind of just, and that's not as specific, but any jump shots, like, we're trying to get 3 out of 4. And I'll usually, depending on the age of the player, I'll usually go elbow, elbow, and then wing, wing, like threes. If it's younger kid, third, fourth grader, I'll pop them out to the wing, but it's like mid-range wing. And that's what I call like working on your shooting, right? And then from shooting, now we start to go into like where we're worried about makes or swishes or whatever. So like, we may do a little like 20 makes in 2 minutes, each of the 5 spots, got to make 2. Okay. If it's a more advanced player, you got to make 2 in a row. If it's an even more advanced player, you got to make 2 in a row. And if you miss 2 in a row, you go back a spot. And then you start to make it competitive. And as we start to get into those competitive time drills, like, if your form's off, we'll go back after that drill's over, since there's a time on it. We're not going to get stuck in it. And like, we don't move on. I tell kids, make it obvious that you can do this. Like, this workout is me seeing where your skill is, and I want to take you to the next level of that skill. So if you're not showing me your best skill, I'm evaluating what I see today in front of me. So show me how easy this is, or how skilled you are that you can move on from this. Like, we can make it harder immediately, if not sooner, but I need to see that we have these steps down, and that your form is, you are landing on the balls of your feet, your elbow is consistently by your eye, you bring it up through the pocket, shoot through your elbow. Like, if you show, you know, and so a good, you know, any elite player shooting warm up about 3-4 minutes, because it didn't take long. Whereas, you know, 8th grade freshman player, like, we're going to spend probably 10-15 minutes on it every single time, because my expertise is the correction. Like, you should be doing this on your own, yes, but if me showing you this is like what you think you're paying me for, like, you're paying me for the correction, you're paying me for the accountability, is how I view it. Especially as I've done, I'm now a skills trainer, and club, I'm an assistant on a couple club teams, but like, I'm paid to help you get better. My service is my skill. Like, my right. service is helping your skill.
Right. Absolutely.
So, you know, giving that feedback to kids, like, and I'm, you know, and try to speak to them, especially during that shooting section. How are we missing? Or missing short and long? I'm not really going to trip on those. Like, things are looking good. Like, obviously, we got to make a little adjustment, but short and long, if we're shooting straight, we're almost there. If we're missing left and right, okay, are you pulling it? Is your elbow in front of your face? No, your elbow should be by your ear, up by your eyebrow, or, you know, is your elbow by your chin? That means you're shooting flat. Is your head going back? The crown of your head should be straight up to the ceiling. Like, all those little details, right? But you start off with, hey, have some bend in your knees, have your palm to your passer, come up, freeze your follow through, balls of your feet. It starts with that. Okay, let's get, you know, swishes or however many, whatever level player, whatever's going to be challenging to that player is the drill we're going to do. And if they're shooting it well, they're going to do some drills that are more challenging. If they're struggling, like, we're going to break it down into more process, or we're going to, you know, shoot 5, see how many we make. We're going to talk about shooting percentage. You know, if we're shooting 5, we want, you know, I call those nickels. For shooting a nickel, we want to make 3 out of 5. If we're doing dimes, we're trying to make 6 out of 10. I'm big on, like, that's how you add up your workout. Like, first team common sense, like, I can add 5s and 10s all day. So if I know I'm going in nickel of this or dimes, you know, nickels, I usually say, like, that's like, if you got 45 minutes, if you got a dime, you got an hour plus, right? Everything you're doing, get 10 reps of it. See what your percentage is. And so, you know.
Yeah, no, like, that makes a lot of sense.
That's 3. Like, reality, live in reality. Like, and I think, again, not me telling you, that's what you did. You made 10 out of 10. You're shooting it really well. hey, you made it 2 out of 10. Like, we probably need to go back and spend a little more time on that form shooting. You know, we were missing it left, right. Or, you know, we shot 6, you know, you made 5 out of 10, but you missed, you know, 2 just off the back iron and 1, you know, just a little bit off. Like, I'm not 5 out of 10, process was good, we're going to move on. So I think just noticing those details and communicating those details is really good development.
All right, tell me a little bit about game shots, and then we can dive back into a little bit of maybe how you got there. But just tell us a little bit about what you're doing right now and how you got into it.
Yeah, so game shots, it's been something I've been thinking about a lot, because I'm very interested in development and player development. And I just remember in high school looking for, like, just tell me what to do. Like, I'm a hard worker, I'm going to do my best. Like, I just need somebody to tell me, here's what the workout you should be doing that's going to get you the results you want. Right. And I've, even as a coach, like, I'm still always in search of that. And, you know, having the experience at Snow Valley, and now it, since moving to Charlotte a couple of years ago, being in the youth development space and seeing, like, I don't think youth coaches are not trying to do their best or not trying to help kids. It's, you know, we're all guilty of it. Yeah, I see a drill on Instagram or YouTube or whatever, you know, social media, I'm going to go put it in practice. And, like, I just have seen a lot of drills that aren't necessarily great for development, or not showing and teaching, here's why you would do this, here's where this drill fits into your workout. And with game shots, I want it to be where you can go get high quality player development and high quality team development. If you've got YouTube, which comes standard on every iPhone and Android. So with that, we're trying to give away, you know, a variety of platform, you know, big on grassroots basketball, because myself and my co-host Tony Sterling, like, Tony does a lot more, especially middle school, high school. And I do a lot at the grassroots level, being involved with Chris Paul middle school combine and stuff like that. So being at that level with what we're trying to do with game shots is enhance that. Obviously, we got to talk some players, and, like, we do have access to these events. And part of my thing I love is advocating for kids that you see at these events, and, you know, different coaches will ask and see, and giving your opinion has been great, like, as an added value. But then going back to giving to players of, like, hey, here's this workout playlist, and I've got one, and we're going to be putting up more in the coming weeks of, hey, as a coach, I can send this to my high school player and know that if they go in and they do this hard as they can, you know, at pushing themselves as far as they can outside of their comfort zone, they're going to get better, because not every coach can be in the gym. And I found when I was a high school head coach, as a guy that's always been big on development, there's not consistent content you can push out that you can trust and know, like, comes from a place of, like, this actually will be getting my player better, and they're not going to be over dribbling or doing things we don't want. And as, you know, we're building out content and getting great feedback from coaches of, like, you know, and I think a place that I really am passionate about is, like, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade basketball of, like, here's how you teach the game. Because, like, some kids are never exposed to a good coach, and they could have been really good, but they can't, you know, they interacted with a coach or whoever that, you know, didn't have the adequate training or wasn't, you know, was trying to do things just the way they saw them. And, like, I've invested a ton of time in traveling, learning, talking, you know, again, I don't have a lot of hobbies with basketball, and especially youth basketball. So, in, you know, living in this space for a couple of years of, hey, like, you got 4 kids that show up to your second grade practice, what should you do? And, like, that's the situation that I feel like not a lot of people talk about, but, like, most youth basketball is in that, like, second through sixth grade range, because there's some kids that get to sixth grade and they think they suck. And it's like, you just have never, no one's really taught you, here's how the game's supposed to be played. You're just out there having fun. Like, whereas, like, a video game will give you feedback, like, whatever it is, like, you find out, like, oh, I'm supposed to do it this way. And the video game gives you that feedback. But in real life, in the game of basketball, like, that's what a coach's job is to do of, like, after you pass, you should cut. I think that's what's so great about, you know, to bring this back to Snow Valley of, like, that's what's so great about Cutthroat. That's what's so good about, you know, all the clinics that people do there, is it teaches you the game. And I think that's what Game Shots is aiming to do, especially in the youth basketball space, as well as provide some coverage of up and coming, just because I think it'd be remiss of, you know, we've Tony and I both put a lot of work into earning this platform and earning some of these opportunities. And I think talking and speaking about those kids, you know, I've been doing this for over a decade, seeing kids, seeing development, being part of club basketball, being part of high school basketball, college basketball, you know, training kids, all of that. And to see that and to have the experience, the knowledge that we've, you know, that I've had and that Tony has had to, you know, speak about players and to let people know about events that are coming up, let people know about Snow Valley Basketball School, let people know about USA Gold Camps, and just really trying to bring just a fresh voice of just a couple guys that, I apologize, my dog Larry Bird's back there getting a squeaker toy here before his walk, you know, providing that for, if you're a dad, all of our, you know, all of our player development content is set up for you to be able to watch it and go teach it to your kid, and they're going to get reps and get better at it. So, like, that's the YouTube channel is all about, like, if the only thing we ask is if you find it useful, be a teammate, share it with a teammate. But it's all about player development, especially, like, not even towards the elite players. And, like, I'll say this stuff is what Division II All-Americans were doing, high school All-State players were doing, all of these drills, like, I stole or I've tweaked or whatever. And, like, those were the results those guys got from those drills. Like, Josh Engel is Division III All-American. He was part of the Breakfast Club when I was in Oregon. Didn't miss a day in 2 years. And, like, that was the stuff we were doing in the gym. So the reps are the reps. And that's kind of what, if a kid wants to work, boy, girl, whatever, if you want to work, like, and you don't know what to do, you can't afford a trainer, you don't have access, whatever, like, if you have somebody that'll rebound for you, pass you the ball, like, you can go get better at it. And obviously, I'm not there in person, but if you have the desire to go get better at the game of basketball, that's what there's for. And, like, there's a lot of different ways to develop players, but this is what I've seen, this is what I've learned, and, you know, pro players, guys are still playing, this is the things they were doing, are still doing. And it's just a way to kind of provide players a blueprint to that process, to the success that they want to achieve.
All right. So I think when I hear what you're talking about, it's all great stuff. And I think it's things that are needed in the basketball space. Anybody who has been around youth basketball at that elementary school age, as you talked about, knows that there's lots of volunteer coaches, there's lots of parent coaches that are struggling to figure out, hey, what do I do to try to provide a good practice environment and a good environment where kids can get better at basketball. So what's the marketing plan for getting that stuff out in front of people? Because I think that's always the biggest challenge, because there's just so much content out there that, you know, as well as I do, that when people go out and search, a million things pop up. So what's the plan for trying to get this in front of the right people?
So, basic 101 is, like, this summer, this will be the first summer we've got real content up. I know myself and then Tony Sterling will be, I think we're going to be in front of about 5,000 to 10,000 players this summer between the two of us, and the camps and events we're going to be at. So I think just the promotion of that, I think the cream always rises to the top. And we're both making a concerted effort to get more out there. I think, you know, specifically in the Charlotte market, like, there's a, you know, my brand with some of the training and stuff, I've got more, you know, a few more clients than I have gym space. So I think from that perspective, we're growing, and, like, we're only getting, when I, you know, for me as a guy that does a lot of the content, we're only getting more and more players and more ages. So I think it's, you know, the reps again of, we're going to consistently do that. We're going to obviously go on and promote it. We're going to bring people on with our podcast. And I think that is going to be our pillar of content in terms of, like, we're going to consistently do that every week. People get to know us, we get to know them, and just, you know, I think the marketing plan has add value to others. And fortunately, having been doing this for, you know, 13 years, there's a lot of people that are giving us good feedback as to things we're going to be getting better at. Along with, you know, just, we're going to be doing some camps this summer, along with Coach's Book Club, weekly podcast, and then, yeah, skills clinics. I know with USA Basketball, I'm going to be speaking at the Gold Camps about this topic specifically. So for people that want to get more information, Or if you're not going to be attending those camps, all that stuff is on there. So we're playing the infinite game. We're both teachers, and you know, I think as the numbers work out, I think, I guess, what advice would you have for myself on how to market a good podcast?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, I think that we're trying to learn all the time, but some of the things that I guess we've been successful with is we try to make as much of the content that we have, especially with interviews, rather than talking to a coach about their specific season or, hey, this particular game or whatever, we try to make it content that if you listen to the episode today or you listen to it 2 years from now, it's still going to be relevant. And so I think that helps, is that people kind of go back, and when somebody discovers the podcast for the first time, they're not just listening to the latest episode. They're able to go back and find sort of the back catalog. So I always find that to be something that I think has been helpful. And then other than that, I mean, we've slowly developed our following on social media, which clearly I think nowadays is something that you have to do and have a good presence and be active on there. We probably could be even more active in terms of interacting with some of the things that people are posting in response to what we put out there. I mean, we bang out a lot of content on there, but we don't necessarily always interact, which is probably something that we could do better. Just a matter of finding the time. I mean, I think that's always the challenge, is finding the time to be able to do some of the things that are required. But I think social media, I think that if you do that, and I think if you can just have content that your catalog in and of itself is valuable and not just the latest episode, which it sounds like that's kind of the direction that you guys want to go with things. To me, that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. And so that'd be the two things that I'd probably recommend. And like I said, we're by no means experts on how to get that done. I think you're always searching, and things are always changing. So It's hard to know what you're doing one moment may not always work in the next. And so you just kind of got to keep on your toes. As we head towards the end here, Joel, I want to ask you one final two-part question. Part one, when you think ahead to the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two of the question is, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
I think the biggest challenge is always just, you know, fighting complacency. As success or fail, you know, in success, making sure you're, you know, staying true to the process. And when you're, you know, things go bad, understand it's all start, you know, part of that process. But in specifically is, you know, to your point of finding time, as a full-time teacher, training 5-6 nights a week, we're going to be doing, I think biggest thing, yeah, will just be the time and managing that time as, you know, things are going to be growing with a couple different leagues and a few different things taking shape here in Charlotte. Hopefully going to be getting not my own facility, but a facility where I'll have more gym space. Because, the time and the gym space are right now the two biggest constraints I'm facing. So good problems to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, just that time for building out content, for, you know, making sure you are connecting and making sure you're keeping the main thing, obviously that main thing, and understanding that you have, you know, having a great amount of gratitude for, you know, just each morning when you wake up and have, you know, able-bodied, clean air, access to, you know, great food, everything like that. Like just remaining consistent and, you know, making sure the ups and downs that you're, you know, just grateful for each day's time and, you know, the opportunity to use your talent, you know, just, you know, improve and hopefully serve somebody, make somebody's day. And then the biggest opportunity, or what was the second part?
Biggest joy.
Oh, biggest every day. Oh man, I love the man. These kids are hilarious. Like kids are hilarious to me. So every day, like, I teach at a school where we're K-5, we're 17 different languages. We got a lot going on every single day, which is awesome. And I love it. But just what brings the joy to me is like, just the little things, you know, from a kid you got a handshake with to a kid that, you know, yesterday they were upset because they didn't have any friends in their class and they're walking in, whatever. Like, that's just the joy, is, you know, seeing that impact. I think every day, and, you know, even if it's not the immediate one, it's, you know, and especially this time of year as for us that are teachers, like this is the bet. Like, this is the, you're reminded every day while you're a teacher, but especially this time of year when kids are, you know, you're seeing that growth. And I think, you know, the spring work, you know, that growth is happening not only physically, but as well as students are, you know, all that work, that relationship, those struggles that, hey, I'm holding you accountable because I know you're better. And, you know, that stuff is starting to pay off. So obviously there's a lot of intrinsic joy that comes from, you know, seeing a kid, once again, from not having a friend to, hey, you know, this is, I've got our soccer team won 3-1 yesterday. Hey, I, you know, found a Girl Scouts troop to find, like, just all those little wins, I think, bring me the most joy. Because, like, especially one of the things I love about my job is, like, kids, because they bring that fresh perspective every day of, like, whether it was good or bad yesterday, the awesome things about kids is just how resilient they are. And, you know, they come in hopefully the next day, and even better if they come in and they're, you know, say good morning and have a smile on their face, it's better yet. So, you know, that stuff is what keeps me going, being around the people, being around, you know, having that impact, seeing that stuff, being able to put, you know, wear shorts every single day as a gym teacher. It's great. Great life.
That's good stuff. I couldn't agree more. I've been in the elementary gym for the last 10 years, and compared to being in the elementary classroom, definitely has been a positive for me. Before we get out, Joel, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, email, social media, website, whatever you want to do, podcast, tell them how they can find it. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Awesome. Well, no, thank you guys. I really appreciate the time and the platform you guys have created. Like I said, I've been listening for a while and you guys do excellent. So to get in touch with me on Twitter and Instagram, it's at Coach J Lincoln. Email at or gameshotsbball@gmail.com. Gameshots, gameshotsbball@gmail.com. And then, yeah, on all of our latest and most updated content is on our YouTube channel, which is also GameShotsBB, which is our Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube is GameShotsBB. So thank you guys. And I privilege, honor, and appreciate you guys listening. I kind of went on a few rants there, so appreciate it.
No, you're good. And we appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with us. It's always fun to have somebody that we've actually met in person, which there's quite a few guys that we've met now at this point, 5 years in, but it's always a pleasure to get a Snow Valley guy on. It's always a pleasure to have, again, somebody that we've been able to have a face-to-face contact with. So thank you, Joel. We really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.